the show!
You have all made it through the dance. You have all made it.
Coming to you from the X-Access, it's John of All Trades with your host, John X.
Welcome to the John of All Trades podcast, episode 47. I'm your host, John X. Thank you for joining us. Glad to have you back once again. It's travel week this week. Actually, the next 2 weeks. Believe it or not, this is going to be my first two-part episode. Didn't plan for it to be this way. Didn't intend to make a two-part episode, but did. And we'll get into why here momentarily. But it's travel week because I have to go on the road this week for the first time since Grace has been born, and it's weird. The idea that I'm not going to be here to feed her and change her and wake up and see her smile at me and stuff, that's kind of messing with me. And it also makes me feel weird because I'm not going to be able to help out my wife. You know, we really tag team the parenting responsibilities, and the idea that she's going to have to do all of this by herself for a couple of days, I don't know. It's making me feel weird. And it's compounded by the fact that I no longer have premier status on United. I didn't travel enough last year, and I now don't get the privileges associated with that, which admittedly aren't even that good. But there's two things that really matter when it comes to business travel. The first is getting to go in the short security line, which if you have premier status, you get to cut that long snake line, which really, really helps. And then secondly, you also get to upgrade to Economy Plus, which has like, you know, whatever, 4 inches more legroom. And I don't care about that. I'm not tall. I'm like 5'9". And so legroom doesn't really do a lot for me. But in general, you get to board earlier. You get to choose better seats. You're towards the front of the plane. You're pretty much guaranteed overhead baggage space. Whereas when you're with, it's sort of the rest of the cattle in the back of the plane, you don't get that at all. It sucks. And the reason I bring this up is because as I was putting together this week's episode, I realized this is not everyone's experience, and not everyone travels a lot, but I'm drawn to it. I love listening to comedians talk about being on the road. I love people who travel for business a lot, and you know, we compare notes about shitty hotels and whatever else. And this week's guest is Ryan Nee. And Ryan Nee is not noteworthy so much for his day job, although he talks about that a little bit in the beginning, and it sounds interesting, and it gives him flexibility to travel and stuff. But he travels a lot, and he travels to interesting places, which is why I had to make this a two-part episode. In the second part of the episode, which will debut next week, he talks about, you know, London, Paris, those are, you know, good places to go. I've been to them. But he likes places that have a little bit more chaos or a little bit more rough and tumble. And so next week, he talks about traveling to North Korea and all throughout the third world. This week is dedicated almost entirely. First, we talk just generically about travel at the beginning of this episode. We share some stories. We share a lot of laughs. We were drinking during this episode, and so it's a very loose chat, and it's a lot of fun. It's one of the most fun interview experiences I had just because we were so loose, and I didn't have any real structure to this because that's sort of reflective of the travel that he does. And this week's episode is focused almost entirely on his travels to Cuba, which now the U.S. has opened up, or rather lifted the embargo with Cuba, and it's much easier to get there. But Ryan was there just a couple of months ago, and it was much, much more difficult. And he tells sort of the hilarious story of having to go through Panama and just trying to walk up to the counter and buy a ticket in the Mexico airport, which, I don't know. It's just very amusing, very interesting, very insightful. And then that transitions into sort of his other travels at the end of this week's episode. But that'll debut next week. This week, it's Ryan Nee talking about Cuba and talking about various travel stuff. We talk about the hipster part of Denver International Airport. If you've ever been on the B concourse and you have to go all the way to the end, then you go to like where they're trying to gentrify it and you're flying to weird places. We talk about how we got to actually have to sprint through the airport, which if you've never done is one intense feeling. Just a great all-around episode. Ryan's a funny guy, and we've known each other for, geez, since I was like 12, I want to say. And I'll have links to some of his writing and stuff. So stay tuned for that. This is two parts. So this week's episode, the chat itself is like 47 minutes. Next week, I haven't put it together yet, but it's somewhere in the neighborhood of like 50. But I think you'll enjoy it. You'll get a lot out of this episode. If you like travel, if you like funny stories, and if you like listening to two guys sort of laugh at each other, It's a great episode. So just a couple of quick reminders. If you're downloading us on iTunes, thank you. Rate and review us. If you're streaming us on Stitcher, same deal. Rate and review us. We appreciate it very much. And also check me out on Facebook and Twitter at JOATpod and at JOATpod. Everything you can find about John of All Trades is on the website. So johnofalltrades.us, that is J-O-N of all trades.us. We thank you very much for listening to us. And why I say us, I don't know. It's like the royal we, I guess. I'm representing the crown, the queen. I don't know. Whatever. Let's get to this week's episode. It's episode 47 of the John of All Trades podcast. Ryan Nee is here. We're talking about Cuba and we're talking about travel in general. So enjoy. The episode starts right now.
We're at the Vatican and you get burned out at eating Italian food.
Yeah.
And so you're like, this one flavor profile is not doing it for me anymore. So we found this little like hipster sandwich shop right nearby called, like, it roughly translated to 200 degrees Celsius or something like that. So they said they had really hot food, and we show up and I ordered, like, you know, whatever was hot, and it wasn't so hot.
Was it like temperature hot?
No.
Like, this food is going to scald the crap out of your mouth.
You won't taste anything for a month.
Yeah, you're going to love it.
Yeah, everything's going to taste like it has an inch of dust on it for a month. But so they said it was supposed to be like spicy food, right? And it wasn't terribly spicy because people in Italy don't...
eat spicy food.
Not so much. But they had like all these microbrews there. And so the punk IPA and the hardcore IPA, and they have this beer called, like, fake lager.
that sounds really suspicious. Fake lager.
They're like, lager gets a bad name, so, you know, it's technically a lager, but tasted really, really good. That's where I first had BrewDogs, and then we came back, and their show's on Esquire, and their show's really good. So if you can find it online, because, I mean, you do, like, hipster TV, right?
Yeah, where I, like, cobble it together out of sticks and mason jars.
Right, yeah, it's just bubblegum and spit. It's like a bird's nest.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's awesome.
I made this HBO myself.
Well, I mean, given how much you're on the go, that probably helps.
Yeah, it's perfect.
Yeah, I mean, I imagine paying Comcast, you know, fucking whatever, like $150 a month is probably not terribly appealing.
Yeah, but still,
if you're jetting, like, off to Cuba...
It's true. It still is like $80 for internet, which is preposterous in my opinion.
But. Like, just for internet?
Yeah, it's horrible. And I do the thing where I call periodically and I like complain, like,
and you threaten to leave,
complaining. Yeah, right. And I'm like, I don't mean it, and they know I don't mean it, but like,
yeah, it's like empty threats.
We do this little dance together, and then I get cheaper service for a while.
Right, and then they're like, "How about this for 6 months?" And you go, "Okay." Because what are your options, really?
Yeah.
Have you tried going to CenturyLink? It sucks worse.
Yeah, exactly.
So
it's weird.
Yeah.
I don't like it.
So, anyway, sitting here with Ryan Nee.
Hello.
Thanks for being here, man.
Thank you for having me. It's ridiculously flattering.
I think you do, I'm not going to say exceptional work, because it's travel.
It's not really work. Yeah.
But that actually brings me to a question. What do you do in your day job that allows you to sort of jet off and go to places like Cuba and North Korea and all over the place?
Well, I am a graphic designer, technically, I guess. But I'm a creative director at a company called Market On Demand.
Okay.
And we basically design websites and iPhone apps and iPad apps and stuff like that mostly for the financial industry.
Okay.
Which sounds horrendous, admittedly, but it really isn't. It's really pretty cool. I get to travel a lot. I go visit clients a lot for work, so I get to travel periodically for work, which is pretty nice.
Yeah, so I go and visit a lot of clients just to sort of do either design exercises with them. So oftentimes clients will have like a sort of a vague idea about what they want to do with their website, or they're not happy with their website, or they're not happy with their app, or they don't have an app, or whatever.
Do you do those branding exercises with them, where it's like, if your company were a car?
You know, we actually have done that.
Yeah, I've done that too in my career. It's always kind of amusing.
Yeah, I mean, I think part of that is I feel like clients have a tendency to really self-edit a lot. They're sort of nervous to tell you anything that they think is not exactly what you need to know.
Right.
And from my perspective, we need to know everything. I need them to just sit and talk candidly with us for a while.
Right.
So I think those exercises are less like, I don't actually care what they think about as a car, but they're more like sort of an exercise to just be like, loosen up a little bit and
right.
go talk about a Tesla or go talk about a Geo or go talk about a Honda Civic or whatever for
a
while.
It's a vehicle to get info.
Yeah, yeah,
yeah.
Literally a vehicle.
Right. No pun intended. I thank you.
I thank you. Yeah, so we do stuff like that a lot. So sometimes I'll go visit people for the sake of doing something that's like before a project actually starts.
Okay.
And that's usually a little bit more abstract, a little bit more like that kind of stuff. Other times I'll go and either present work that we have done sort of in progress to a bunch of people.
Right.
Or present like the final designs that we've made. So like I went and visited sort of like a gigantic United States bank. I don't know if I should even say.
No, people, don't.
Just so.
You know what? We'll leave it up as an exercise to the listener to determine who that is.
Perfect. So I went and presented some designs that we had made for like 9 months, and it was something like 150 pages of this really, really massive site.
Yeah.
And we probably presented it to 200 people.
Yeah.
Kind of coming through in groups of 20.
And were
so
you
just presented over and over and over and over.
Were you like the point person for this?
Yeah.
Good Lord, man.
Yeah. So like I have a team of like 8 people. It kind of varies here and there.
Okay.
But you know, usually we'll have like 2 or 3 projects going at any given time, and there'll be a couple people on each project. So like for a project like that would last for 9 months, usually I would be the person that is kicking it off and presenting the final stuff.
Oh, right.
And a lot of like the kind of core team would be presenting it and sort of going through the designs week by week.
Right. Yeah.
So there's a lot of travel kind of involved there. Sometimes it's to really boring places. Like when I first started working, I went in the course of a month to like Tokyo and Hong Kong and London and New York and like all these rad places. And then like in the last couple of years, it shifted and I've been traveling to such exotic places as Charlotte and St. Louis and Minneapolis, which is, you know, obviously a lot less interesting, but you know, it's cool. It changes all the time. Like my job changes all the time. And I really like that aspect of it. Occasionally I get to go to really cool places, which is pretty
awesome. How much are you on the road in a given year for work?
I probably do a trip a month, more or less. So it's not a ton. Like I feel like whenever I see people like at the airport that are like hardcore business travelers, I'm like, I feel like a faker.
Oh yeah.
But at the same time, like I travel way more than most people.
Do you, I flew, because of the places I flew and because it's Denver, I ended up being fairly loyal to United, and I traveled enough to be like Premier Silver.
Yeah.
But that was it. Like my dad, I think is 1K. I think my dad's now Global Services.
Holy crap.
Yeah.
You have to fly all the time for that.
And he does. I mean, he's probably on a plane at least once a week.
Yeah.
Which is crazy.
It seems like it would be cool. Like you hear about all those things and you're like,
Oh,
1K. Like, oh, it'd be so cool to be like, be able to get on the airplane first and like sit in a fancy seat. And it's like to actually achieve that status, you spend so much of your time on an airplane.
So much misery.
But it's just like that's not fun at all. Like,
no.
Like right now I am sitting in a really comfortable room and I am drinking a beer.
That's like, right.
I'm not on a cramped airplane. And like, it's sort of as like getting status on an airplane is like winning like a higher up level in hell or something. It's like, yeah, that's cool, but it's not that cool.
Yeah, but it comes with some shit, you know, basically. Yeah. But so when you travel, do you have any like premier status?
You know, there was a while where I was traveling a ton and I had status on Southwest, Frontier, and United all at the same time. and that was sweet. And I was like, oh my God.
Wait a minute, what do you get with status in Frontier?
Well, they like,
do they give you an extra cookie? Or?
Yeah. They don't treat you like as much of garbage as they treat everyone else.
Right. The airline sponsors.
Sorry.
That's all right.
So I think you get to like board first is like the main thing that you usually get. And then sometimes you actually get, to go through security faster, which is sort of nice.
Yeah. No, that's the one thing I really liked about United was doing the short line.
Yeah. Yeah. And that isn't even like, that and like I don't care about the time. Like I'm kind of like a get to the airport way early and like have a couple beers at the airport kind of guy.
That's
so
cool.
Like I don't really like sometimes I'll cut it a little bit close, but I don't really care about the time. It's more like that you see the big line and you're like, not gonna stand in you. You know?
Yeah, totally. It's almost like I don't mind driving if you're moving well. But if you're sitting in traffic, like LA style,
totally, yeah,
yeah, then like it could take the same amount of time, but it's almost like the value proposition is worse.
Yeah, yeah,
and it makes you crazy.
Yeah,
so
it's like why people will go like miles out of their way because they're like, at least I'm like driving around, like having to pay attention, and I'm like,
at least there's motion.
Yeah, yeah,
but yeah, have you been on the B concourse? Like, you know, when you get to the end. And it looks like there's just window there, but then there's like a right turn and a downstairs.
Yeah.
Have you flown out of there?
Okay. So I actually was crazy late to a work trip thing. And you know, like if I miss my own flight for like going on vacation or something, like whatever.
Right.
But like, I'd feel like such a dick calling in to work and being like, hey, I missed the flight that I was supposed to be on.
Can you rebook me?
Yeah, we need to call the client and tell them I'm not going to make it and all this stuff. So I cut it really close one time, and my flight was down there.
Right.
And, like, to me, like, DIA is just, like, DIA. Like, basically, it takes the same time to get to any gate, except for that area. Right. And so...
What was it, like, B83 or something?
It was so far. Right. I felt like I was going, like, forever. It was way past, like, the New Belgium Brewery and all that stuff. So, like, texting the guy that I was traveling with, and he's like, dude, they're, like, doing last call at the gate, and I had just gotten off the little train.
Oh, no.
And so I, like, actually ran.
You sprinted?
I sprinted through the airport. I was, like, that weird guy that's sprinting through
the airport. You get to do that, like, the George Clooney sprint through the airport?
Yeah, yeah, except for I don't look like George Clooney, and I don't have, like, a million girlfriends.
Oh, pshaw.
Yeah. I look a little bit like him, let's be honest.
Yeah, let's be serious.
Yeah. So I am sprinting, and I'm really out of shape in general. So I make it to the gate. I manage to get on the plane. It's like the world's tiniest plane because all the planes out there are like those weird tiny planes. So there's like, you know, the whole thing's packed. I'm like the last one on the plane. I'm like, we knee family people are like the sweatiest people in the universe. Okay. And so I'm like dripping sweat and I get on and I'm like, can I have a water? And they're like, we can't serve water right now. We have to serve it after takeoff. I'm like, I seriously am going to die if I don't get a water right now.
Yeah.
And they're like, we can't give you water.
You're like, do you see how much moisture I'm losing at a rapid rate here?
And I'm like, I'm sitting there and like, you know, for most people, like running for 20 minutes wouldn't be like a big thing.
Yeah.
But like, I don't know. I don't run really ever. So like, like having run for 20 minutes, I feel like hell on earth. And I was like running at like a good clip too.
Yeah.
So I'm like sitting there on the plane, like wheezing. And the guy next to me is like looking at me like, why did I have to sit next to this guy? You know?
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm like sort of like the 15 pounds overweight guy going like, oh my God, why? It was horrible. It was horrible. So I hate that area of the airport, just to answer your question in a really long fashion.
If you ever get there though, in normal time, like I like it because I call it the hipster part of the airport.
Yeah.
Cause it's like the part of town that's trying to gentrify itself.
Yeah.
Cause there's like the New Belgium Brewery and there's like a Heidi's downstairs and you're going to all these like, you know, all these goofy places like Bozeman, Montana, or like you can fly to fucking, you know, like Hayes, Kansas or something.
Yeah.
And
or like you can fly to like Colorado Springs and you're like, wouldn't it be easier to not fly to Colorado Springs?
This seems like an awful lot of rigmarole.
Yeah.
Although I thought about, I was doing business in Wyoming a few years ago and I needed like two more status segments to get Premier. And so I'm like, I could fly up to Cheyenne. Because I heard the flight announcement for that, and I go, how long are you in the air for that?
Like, yeah, like
5 minutes?
45 seconds. Like, we're now passing over Fort Collins. Everyone put on your seatbelts, we're landing.
I flew to Aspen once, though, and that was a great flight. Because you get on it, and they actually try and do, like, a service, which is really cute. It's like 25 minutes of flight
time.
And so they'll bring you your you know, your Coke Zero or whatever your beverage of choice is. Yeah. That's mine. And then they collect them really fast. You're like, I'm not even done. What am I in college? Like, why am I chugging this?
Drink up, bud.
Yeah, they're like, chug a lug, dipshit.
Yeah.
So, but that was one of my favorite flights, and it was only like $250. So I'm like, okay,
Yeah.
Yeah, I'll fly to Aspen. I won't drive the 4 hours.
Because, yeah, driving to Aspen kind of sucks. It's like, yeah. I mean, it's really pretty, admittedly, but it's also just like, ugh.
It's fine. Yeah, it's kind of a pain in the ass, though.
Yeah.
The worst flight I was ever on, I flew back from Grand Junction, and I was really, really hungover. Because
it happens.
I went out with some clients. Or no, not some clients. I was their client. So I went out with some consultants, and Daniel Tosh happened to be in town. So we went and caught his show.
That's awesome.
And yeah, it was really fun. So Tosh is there, and we end up, like, the town doesn't get a lot of acts come through it, right?
Yeah.
And Daniel Tosh even did a joke about it. He goes, "You might be wondering why I'm in Grand Junction." Well, I got two reasons. Route mapping and venue availability.
So I'm, that's
like,
awesome.
Okay. I'm like, I don't think that's a joke.
Yeah, it's like he's just stating the facts before he gets started.
Pretty much. By the way, Mormon jokes don't play so well on Grand Junction. You're awfully close to Utah.
Oh, yeah. I never thought about that.
He told a Mormon joke, and it was just like silence. It wasn't booing or anything, because like,
people were just like, it was
people
like
just
too,
go, no.
Too close. Yeah.
People are like, no thanks. But anyway, So the venue ran out of booze, because like
what?
Like Mesa State's out there,
because
right?
The Mormon people were hitting it hard.
Right. So they ran out of booze, and I definitely helped with that. But I got on the plane, and I felt okay. But mid-flight, I go, oh, no. And we hit a lot of turbulence, and the flight attendant didn't even pick up the service items.
What?
Like, no, like, have you ever been on a flight like that where,
no.
Like, there's going to be so much turbulence that they don't even get up because it's unsafe for them?
Wow.
So I'm like, oh, no. And I'm tearing the leather, like, off the armrest. And I'm wearing these flip-flops, and they're just pools of sweat in them.
Gross.
And so I got up, and I was so happy to be alive. I didn't even throw up or anything, but I probably should have.
Just for good measure?
Yeah, just to put a punctuation on the experience. Yeah. But yeah, dude, so.
Barfing is like the punctuation of bodily functions.
Yeah, totally. So let's talk about actually interesting travel.
Not going to Cleveland or whatever.
Yeah, I mean, I could relate the. This isn't even my. I'm interviewing you. Your most recent trip was to Cuba.
It was,
and that's not an easy. Well, it's easier now.
Yeah,
but at the time they hadn't even announced that Cuba like was open to Americans. So I mean, how did you get down there?
Yeah, so people say that you can go through Mexico. So people typically, I think, go through Mexico or Canada. The weird thing is that...
That would suck to go through Canada. Jesus.
Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
I guess if you
I
live
like
in...
if you lived in New York or something.
Yeah, Michigan or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. Or somewhere extremely near Canada. which I do not live anywhere near Canada.
I appreciate you bottom lining this for me.
So, yeah, I was like, okay... Well, first of all, I decided really late that I wanted to go to Cuba. I had 3 weeks of vacation that I needed to use for work before the end of the year.
But, like, use it or lose it?
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Which is how it is every year. But I just, for some reason, like, normally I have, like, my trip, I usually try to do a week or a yearly trip for a couple okay. weeks. And for some reason this year, I was just like, I just don't know where I want to go. And,
right.
You know, I was just kind of, like, not really sure. So I ended up deciding 2 weeks before that I wanted to go to Cuba. So I really poorly researched the whole thing.
Okay.
And so like I read some stuff and people were like, yeah, just show up at the Cancun airport and like walk up to the Cubana Airlines desk and like everything will be fine. And I was like, oh, okay.
Just walk up to the desk. Like, what yeah, like year
buy,
is it?
Yeah, like buy an airplane ticket at the airport like you're in Wings or something. So I'm like...
Like it's the fucking 1980s.
Yeah.
One exactly. ticket to Cuba, please.
Yeah, which is what I was planning on doing.
Wow.
So I like get off the airport or in Cancun, and like Cancun is a travel destination that people choose for some inexplicable reason.
Okay.
But it's not somewhere I would ever plan on going.
Why is that? Because I've heard you talk about this, but why?
I don't like beaches. I'm very pasty. I'm very nerdy.
Right.
I like history and chaos and beer and stuff like that.
Right.
I don't really like sitting at the beach. Like, I don't like dance clubs.
You don't like wasting a whole day away? Like,
no, particularly not in Margaritaville.
I did not mean for that to come out. And which is so funny because I fucking hate Jimmy Buffett.
The worst.
So much.
The worst.
Just,
yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah. If there was like a Venn diagram of people that like Jimmy Buffett and people that I would ever want to associate with, it would like not overlap at all.
There'd be like three sort of stragglers and you go, what the hell? Who are you people?
Yeah, that's... But... Shit, I don't even remember what...
Okay, so you go to Cancun.
So I was in Cancun. I got off the plane. I go to the Cubana desk. It's empty. And I'm like, okay. And so I like ask the desk... next to them, which happened to be Air Canada. I'm like, hey, you know, is this person coming back anytime soon? And
they're like, how long did you wait?
I waited for probably like 45 minutes.
45 minutes?
I was like walking around the airport. I went and took a pee.
Came back. Like keeping your eye on the desk.
I was just like, well, maybe they're taking a break or something. So, you know, I was trying to be patient. And I finally like asked the Air Canada desk. I'm like, is this person ever coming back? And they're like, we haven't seen that guy in days. I'm like, oh God. So I'm like, okay.
Dufresne, search party of two.
Search party of two. I love that joke.
Yeah, I do too.
So
how can you eat at a time like this? The Dufresnes are missing.
So good. Rest in peace, Mitch Hedberg.
So much.
So I'm like, kind of like, okay, well, it was getting kind of dark. And I was just, I actually booked a place in Cancun because I booked like a hostel in Cancun, kind of knowing that this might happen.
Right.
So I was like, all right, well, I'll just go to that hostel and try again tomorrow. So I took the bus into Cancun and I like, stayed there. And then I spent the whole next day trying to figure out how the hell to get to Cuba.
Mm-hmm.
And the cheapest flight that I could find, no joke, was 13,000 euros. Which is $15,000. And the travel agent was like, I found a flight. I'm like, great, great. And he's like, it's a little bit expensive. I'm like, how expensive are we talking about? And he's like, $15,000. I'm like, yeah, that's like way out of my price range. Like not even close.
And this is what, like a 90-minute flight?
Yeah. It's like be probably shorter than the flight to Aspen, realistically. Yeah.
Yeah, probably.
So I'm like, that's crazy. So I'm like sitting in a travel agency, starting to get kind of upset actually, because I wouldn't have ever come to Cancun. I wouldn't have ever come to Playa del Carmen or any of these places on purpose.
Senor Frogs, no.
No, there is a Senor Frogs. There's like three of them in Playa del Carmen. It's crazy.
I went to the one, it was off season, but I went to the one in Cabo and I watched this Mexican chick. There was this old couple, like two couples who were in their like 70s. And they were down there, like, taking shots. So this woman comes up blowing this whistle with, like, this huge, like, tequila cannon or whatever.
Yeah.
Tequila cannon. And blasts it into this old lady's face. And then she's got her mouth closed, and she comes behind her, grabs this old lady's tits, and starts shaking them, blowing the whistle, while her husband's like, and like Kristen and I are watching this going, holy shit, this is off season in Cabo. Which it was
tequila cannon.
Yeah, I don't know. It was fucked up, dude.
That's insane.
So I know from Senior Frogs apparently.
Yeah. So I'm researching the whole day trying to figure out what's going on. I end up calling my parents because I was like in that, you know, when you get like really down and out and you're kind of like, the only people that can help me right now are my parents.
Totally.
And I'm like 31, so those moments happen more and more rarely, but like I was in one of them for sure. And so I called them and I was like, here's what's going on, da 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 da. And my mom goes, hey, did you read the news today? And I was like, no. She's like, do you know that Obama just completely opened up the relations with Cuba? And I was like, holy shit, really?
That happened while you were down there?
Yeah. While I was trying to buy a flight to Cuba.
Jesus, dude.
Yeah. And but they hadn't opened up travel stuff yet, which they did actually since then. I went to Cuba like a month ago, and a lot has happened since then.
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Sort of with relations. So anyway, very long story short, I ended up finding a flight 2 days later or something that went through Panama. And then Panama City, Panama, and then back up to Havana, which is like basically 6 hours out of the way. But it was fine. You know, I don't mind being on planes that much.
And you had that layover in Panama too, right?
Yeah. So on the way out of Cuba, I had a really sweet layover where I had like a super great time with this taxi driver who I basically just like, I asked a taxi driver if we could just drive around for 3.5 hours during my layover. And he's like totally into the idea. He wanted to like show me everything. He was really proud of his city. He took me to the Panama Canal. He's like taking pictures pictures of me on his BlackBerry and stuff. It's really weird. But it was really cool. It was like totally, totally great. So, you know, things like that happen. I think when you're traveling and you're like, I'm gonna have to go through Panama. And then it like turns out to be fine. Like who cares? You know, like I would have never gone to Panama before, but suddenly I'm like looking at the Panama Canal and like totally awestruck by the whole thing. And like, it's awesome.
So when you finally got on the plane, were you on like Cuban Airlines or whatever?
I was on Copa, which is, I guess it's like a Panama based airline, but it's like part of the Star Alliance and stuff. So it's like a pretty legit airline.
Okay. So you weren't on like that plane, like they have to take at the beginning of Major League.
No, it wasn't sketchy actually at all.
Okay.
Pretty much everything from there out was pretty sketchy.
Afterward?
Yeah, like even the immigration line was 3.5 hours.
Holy shit.
And there were probably only 80 people in line. I'm not completely sure how it took so long, but you have to have a lot of paperwork. Like I feel like the more third world or the more particularly communist the place that you go is, you have to have just like a bonkers amount of paperwork. Your paperwork has to be really pristine. You can't like screw anything up about it.
You can't have like a coffee ring on it.
Exactly. Right. So I went through immigration. You have to buy travel insurance because they don't have any relations with the U.S. You can't use credit cards. You can't use debit cards. You can't use your own insurance. There's all kinds of stuff that is sort of unusual compared to most places. Yeah. So they make you buy travel insurance. And even that I was getting like really vague explanations of before I left. People were like, sometimes they make you buy it. Sometimes they don't. I met a bunch of people, actually the vast majority of people that I met from the U.S. in Cuba didn't have to buy travel insurance, but they made me buy it. I'm not exactly sure why.
Well, whatever.
So there's a lot of like kind of random weird things that happen. And I didn't have a place to stay, actually. So
you didn't book a place to stay?
No. So I landed at like 7 p.m. in Havana, and I was like, I'll be fine, you know, whatever. Like, I'll go, and it won't be too late, and I can go wander around and try to find a place to stay.
Wait, so hold on. So you can't use credit cards, you can't use debit cards. I don't know if I should be embarrassed to not know this or what, but what is the currency in Cuba?
So there's two of them, amazingly. They're both called pesos, but one of them's called like convertible something pesos.
Okay.
And people call them kooks, C-U-C. Which sounds like a racial slur, kind of.
Yeah.
So I, you know.
How many kooks in your truck?
Yeah, exactly. Can you please stop saying kooks?
You're making my white guilt just flicker.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
So there's two currencies. One, the kooks are primarily used by foreigners, and then there's like a local version that's just also, that people just call pesos.
Okay.
And you don't really see that often as a foreigner. But the crazy thing is you have to bring in all of your money with you into the country.
Okay.
So you can't actually, because you can't use debit cards or credit cards or traveler's checks or anything like that, you basically bring it all in cash.
Does that increase the threat of getting robbed then?
Yeah. And I did get robbed.
Actually. Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. And I got robbed with $1,500 on me. Guy amazingly didn't find all of it, which was really good.
Did you have it spread out on your person?
Sort of. I had some of it in my bag, which was back at the place that I was staying. And then I had, which I had like maybe $200 back there. So I had like $1,500 with me.
Yeah.
I think I had like $1,700 with me, and I had some of it back in my bag. I had like $100 in my wallet, and then I had a money belt.
Yeah.
And my money belt had my passport and my money in it. And the vast majority of my money. Kind of assuming that like, I'm probably more likely to just lose something than I am to get it stolen. So I was a little bit worried about putting a bunch of stuff in my backpack because I'm like, I'll probably lose my backpack.
Right. You know?
But I'm like, I'm probably not going to lose my money belt that I have like tucked in my pants. Right. You know? So yeah, but it's kind of crazy just because you have to bring so much money with you.
Yeah.
And then people are like, where are you from? And you kind of know that like the answer to that, like I'm not normally afraid of telling people that I'm American.
Right.
But people are aware that Americans have a crap ton of money on them out of necessity. And so that's the only thing that made me nervous about saying that I was American. But in general, it turned out okay. And actually, the guy that robbed me didn't actually even know where I was from in the first place. Good thing, probably.
Were you like North Havana?
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, from here.
Yeah, obviously.
I look like Irish, kind of, but I'm Cuban, born and raised.
Totally.
Yeah.
So so the guy who robbed you, I interrupted like a dick. He didn't know you were American. How much did he take off you?
He stole like $130, which was everything that I had in my wallet.
Okay, that's not bad.
It wasn't that bad, yeah. Considering what I had on me, I was like pretty. I felt pretty relieved actually afterward.
So what happened? How did he rob you?
Well, so I was walking on the street and I was kind of going from one neighborhood to another, and both of the neighborhoods were on different maps in my guidebook. So I was like, okay, well, I kind of can understand how these two neighborhoods connect, and so I was just like walking from one to the other. And I was walking into a neighborhood called Centro Havana, which is like, as you might expect, Central Havana.
Wait, back up?
Yeah, exactly.
I follow.
Yeah, they just changed the V's to B's, and then you're pretty much good.
Quality.
So I was walking through this area. Central Havana is like, it looks sort of like, imagine like Europe, but it got bombed and nobody fixed anything.
Okay.
Or like a really crappy part of like Queens or something.
Okay.
Or like the Bronx or whatever.
Yeah, yeah. So pretty rough, pretty hard scrabble.
Yeah, but it's hard to tell because like if you're in the Bronx and you're in a really sketchy neighborhood and you've lived in America your whole life, you have a really good sense of how sketchy the neighborhood actually is. Mm. But when you're in a foreign country, like, I don't know, maybe everywhere is like this.
Yeah, maybe this is normal.
Yeah, I just didn't, you know, it's sort of hard to tell. So anyway, I was like walking through and I kind of got a little bit lost and the streets weren't like connecting in the way that I thought they were going to. So I started asking people for directions. I asked this woman for directions and then she pointed me down the street, asked this guy for directions, and the guy started to get like really up in my grill.
Up in your business?
Yeah, up in my business. And he was kind of yelling at me and I sort of speak Spanish. I took like probably 4 years of Spanish in middle school and high school. So like I can understand, like when people speak Spanish, I can sort of understand it.
Yeah, you pick up enough, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so this guy's speaking Spanish, I think, but he's pretty much just yelling at me, and I don't understand a word that he's saying. So I was like, no comprende, no comprende. I'm like, ¿Dónde está Parque Central? Which is where I was trying to go.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, ¿Dónde está Parque Central? And I'm sort of pointing, like, can you help me find Parque Central? And he's like, oh, Parque Central? Parque Central? And he, like, totally switches into this completely different mode. And I was like, sí, Parque Central. And he's like, oh, it's right down here.
In English?
Okay. No.
Okay.
But he's like points. He's like, and I'm like, it's over here. And he's like, see, see, see. And so I
was going to say, that's like the ending of Argo.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm like, oh. I love that movie, by the way. It's really good.
Yeah, totally.
So I start walking down the street and I had gotten robbed in India before.
Right.
And I'm walking down this street and I'm like, this street reminds me so much of the street where I got robbed in India. And when I got robbed in India, a guy came up from behind me and I like sort of saw his shadow.
Yeah.
And I was like, I should look behind me. And so I looked behind me and this guy who had just basically given me directions down the street was still standing there. And this is like 3 or 4 minutes later.
Right.
And I was kind of like, oh shit.
Yeah. I'm getting robbed.
Yeah. I pretty much knew.
Yeah.
But I tried to play it cool, sort of. So I go, Parque Central, this way, this way. And he goes, see, this way. And he kind of gives me like a look. And I think we both just knew what was happening.
Right.
He certainly did, obviously. So I walk like a little bit further. I walk like 2 more seconds. And then I turn around again. And he's really close to me with like the biggest rusty knife I've ever seen in my life.
Wow.
And he's like holding it in my face. And he's kind of like, you know, like showing his teeth like a fucking rabid dog or something.
Just like,
yeah, kind of. Like, I mean, he's like looking scary on purpose.
Right.
To try to scare the crap out of me. Which he
did it work?
Yeah, it worked pretty well. Success. So I'm like, I had like prepared for this for so long. So I'm like weirdly calm about it. I'm not sure exactly how, but like something kicked into my brain.
Well, like, you've been robbed like plenty traveling like all throughout the third world, which we'll get to.
But yeah, yeah, yeah. 4 times so far. So this is the fourth. And so I was like,
so you're like an old hand at this.
Yeah. I'm like, I got this guy. I'm ready. So I grab my, I like sort of indicate to him that I'm going to grab my wallet. And he like looks at me. And I grab my wallet. I grab all the money out of it.
Mm-hmm.
And because I didn't want to like lose my IDs and stuff.
Yeah.
So I grabbed all the money and I just handed him all the money out of it, which was like the $130.
Yeah, yeah.
I put my wallet back in my pocket and I look at him and I'm like, are we good? Like, are we okay?
Yeah.
And he's like, yeah, we're good. You know, this is all like sort of not in English.
Unspoken, yeah. Yeah.
And so I start to walk back down the street, the opposite direction of where he was. And then I look back again and he's like kind of running up to me again. And I was like, oh my God, this guy's going to kill me.
Yeah.
I was really worried because like when you get robbed, you know, you assume they're just in it for the money.
Yeah.
So it's just,
and now
like,
he has the money. What else could he possibly want?
Right.
Yeah.
So he goes, he kind of points at me and he goes, Itumochia, Itumochia, which I knew meant and your backpack, and your backpack. And so I was like, okay, you know, and I slung my backpack off my shoulders and sort of tossed it at him. And it ended up totally fine. But the thing that sucked was like, my backpack was full of things that were really valuable to me, but not very valuable to anyone else.
Yeah, yeah.
So it was like my Cuba guidebook, my rain jacket, yeah. my sunscreen, my iPhone charger, my camera charger.
Yeah.
All stuff that the guy's going to open the backpack 30 seconds later and be like, ah, man.
God damn it.
Yeah. But it was all stuff that really screwed me not having it.
Yeah.
Because I hadn't really prepared for this trip. So, like, well, suddenly and I didn't
what
have
day
a
was this? When did this happen?
It was my first day.
Your first fucking day?
Jesus. Yeah.
Well,
yeah.
And it's not like he can go to the Cuba or the Havana Apple store.
No, yeah.
And, like,
yeah. So there's actually no, you can't really buy any foreign goods at all.
Jesus.
In Cuba. So I actually realized, like, I don't have my camera charger. I don't have my iPhone charger, which were basically my two cameras that yeah. I had. And I was like, I really want to take pictures of this trip, you know? So I was like kind of downtrodden the next day. And I was like, I'm going to go try to figure out how the hell to get an iPhone charger in Havana. So I like went to all the 5-star hotels, which there are very few, and they're 5-star is a really big stretch.
Okay. They're very liberal with the distinction.
Yeah, they're officially 5-star hotels, but they're really beautiful old colonial buildings, but uh-huh. they're so run down and they're so crappy. And even like you go to like the toilet in the lobby and like half the urinals are broken, you
okay.
know, like it's right. like that kind of place. So yeah, 5-star is like a huge stretch.
Right.
So I'm going to all these hotels and I'm like asking like, did anybody leave an iPhone charger here that I might be able to have?
Right.
And, everybody tells me to go to this street. And so I go to this street and everybody's like, you can find one on this street. And I'm like wandering around and I finally ask somebody, they're like, you're not going to be able to buy that anywhere in Cuba, like that's an American product.
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, I know, but like, you know, maybe somebody's slipping one in.
Yeah, but
somewhere.
You're Cuba. Is there not a black market here to speak of?
Yeah. So I accidentally wandered into a restaurant, which I thought it looked like a store from the outside because I was trying every store I could find.
Right.
I wandered into a restaurant and this guy is like, can I help you? And I was like, well, sort of. He's like, are you hungry? I'm like, I'm not hungry. I'm actually looking for a charger to this iPhone. And he's like, I will help you. So this guy's like wearing like an apron and like restaurant stuff.
Right.
And he takes me for 30 minutes around the city to try to find an iPhone charger. I'm like, don't you need to get back to work? And he's like, ah, whatever. Screw it. I don't care.
That's communist.
Yeah. I'm not going to get fired.
I'll make the same amount of money anyway.
Yeah, exactly. That's seriously what he told me. So we're like going to like all these sketchy black market places and like we're like asking some kids in a stairwell and like the guy has one iPhone charger, but it's his and he won't give it up.
Right.
And then like we're going all over the place. That actually was like one of my most fun days in Cuba because it's like an experience I would never normally have.
Well, no, dude. Like going with what some restaurant guy.
Yeah.
Searching like wearing, the black market.
Wearing his like weird bib thing that he has on.
Did he smell like chicken parts?
A little bit.
A little bit, yeah.
But he was, like, such a nice guy.
Yeah.
And I didn't know, like, I'm like, presumably he wants me to, like, tip him at the end of this.
Of course.
So I did. But it was awesome. I ended
How
up
much?
Finding an iPhone charger. I tipped him, like, $5.
Wow.
I don't know. Is that too much? A little?
I have no sense
I don't
for that
either.
Whatsoever.
Yeah.
Was he happy?
He was super happy.
Did he give you any sort of weird, like...
No. He was, like, he seemed, like... pretty happy with
pretty enthused
it.
With
yeah
okay good
I mean so I kind of like gave it to him and like you know when you're like your grandpa gives you money like tries to slip you
like
money
with the
something.
Handshake
totally I like did that because I'm like an awkward creep I was like maybe I should just slip him money I'm like I could have probably just given him money like a regular
maybe he should have slipped it under his bra strap like a hotel card key
totally I should have yeah I'm not sure if he was wearing a bra or not actually but
probably not
but like random things like that kind of happened and happened there quite a bit. Like people will come up to you all the time and try to like help you with stuff, which is a little bit unnerving, particularly after I got robbed.
Yeah. Did you enjoy Cuba?
The first 3 days I pretty much hated.
Yeah. Well, when you kick it off by getting robbed on the first day. And
yeah. I mean, it's really pretty in like a weird, completely destroyed sort of way. It's totally unusual. You can't believe you're right next to Florida.
Okay.
I mean, you're 80 miles from Florida.
Does
basically.
It feel like you traveled back in time?
Kind of, yeah. So one of the coolest things about Cuba is that there are all these like American cars there. And that's like, I feel like whenever you see pictures of Cuba, it's like this cool like vintage car in front of an old dilapidated building.
Yeah.
And I always just thought like when I saw those pictures, I'm like, yeah, there are like, you know, a couple hundred old American cars.
Right.
It's like 50% of the cars are classic American cars.
It's like, so like classic, like what, like Chevy Bel Airs and Malibus from the 50s. And shit?
Yeah.
Wow.
So, so Fidel Castro took over in, I think, like 1958, if I'm remembering correctly.
Yeah.
And so basically from then on out, they haven't gotten any new American anything.
Okay.
So they have all these old cars from before Fidel Castro. And it's just amazing. They've like fixed them up. I mean, they've got to be the greatest mechanics on earth.
They're like totally restored and everything.
They've like put new, well, they're not restored in the way that like a classic car person in the U.S. would restore a car.
Oh, right, right.
But they're functional. They're oftentimes beat to all hell. And they're like dented and damaged and all kinds of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
And then the crazy thing is that a lot of them are taxis. So,
okay.
And taxis in Cuba, because there's not really a very good bus system, people have just sort of compensated for the fact that the government doesn't provide very good buses. So, like, you'll see, like, this vintage American car come, pick up, like, three, like, beautiful women on their way to, like, a club.
Right.
And they'll get into the car that is already full of, like, a family with little kids and whatever. And, like, everybody just packs in there.
Okay.
It's almost like little makeshift buses, sort of.
Oh, wow.
And so you see these, like, really random groups of people, like, driving around together in these beautiful vintage cars.
Wow.
So it's pretty cool. And Cuba, just in general, like, it's probably the most racially diverse place I've ever been in a really, really cool way, where you see, like...
That, I find that surprising.
Yeah. It's like people... There aren't very many, like, white people in sort of, like, a Swedish or Irish sense, like you or me.
Right.
But pretty much everybody from sort of, like, a light-skinned Hispanic person all the way through black people and everyone in between. And everybody hangs out with each other. It didn't seem like there were any sort of, like, racial... cliques or divisions or like didn't seem like there were like black neighborhoods or whatever.
Were there like Asian people?
Not really.
That seems unlikely.
There actually used to be, weirdly, in Havana, there's a Chinatown that doesn't have any Chinese people in it.
Okay.
Because a lot of them left when Fidel Castro took over. So a lot of people in Cuba left because they just couldn't handle it. They didn't like the idea of the new government. Mm. The old government was very aligned with the United States, and obviously the new one under Castro wasn't. So a lot of people fled to Florida, including almost all of the Asian people that lived in Havana in particular.
Wow. So you were there for a week, and the first part of the week was tough. Second part of the week, sounds like you came around on it a little bit.
Yeah, I went to a town called Vinales, which is like up in the middle of nowhere. And actually, like, my friend randomly, when I was kind of down and out, I like posted on Facebook, like this sucks. I'm like not going to be able to go to Cuba. And he was like, if you make it there, go to this town called Vinales. It's my favorite place I went.
Okay.
And so based completely on his recommendation, I went to Vinales.
And where is that in relation to Havana?
It's like west, I guess, directly west. So Havana is sort of like in the northwestern part of Cuba.
Okay.
And Cuba is basically just like this big, weird, like salamander looking strip thing. So it wasn't that far from Havana, but it was like a cool, it was like a 2.5 hour drive. It's like out in the middle of nowhere, kind of. It's really pretty. It has all these sort of like sugarloaf kind of mountains. We rode bikes around and you stay with families in Cuba. So like I stayed with a family in Havana. I stayed with a family in Vinales and pretty much all over the place. You just stay in people's houses.
Wait a minute. How do you find these families?
So there's like a logo outside. It's like, it looks like this,
like almost, a little like icon.
Yeah. It looks almost like an anvil sort of.
Okay.
Or like an anchor maybe. Sort of like halfway between the two. And it's like a blue icon that you just see all over the place.
Okay.
I would say maybe a third of the houses in Cuba have them. So you can just wander around and like knock on people's doors and be like, can I stay here? And they're like, yeah, I don't see why not. It's totally crazy.
And do you pay them or like?
Yeah, yeah. So usually it's $20 a night or $30 a night if you're in Havana.
That's not bad. That's quite nice, actually.
Yeah, and you get a private room, and usually they have a bathroom. They're a little run down, but one of the cool things about Cuban houses is that they have like really vaulted ceilings. So even if you're in kind of a dumpy place, it usually would have like a 20 or 30 foot ceiling.
So it breathes really nice.
Yeah, it's just you know, like you feel like you're in a mansion almost.
Wow.
Even though you're in like, you know, a poor person's house.
Yeah, probably, weird.
Realistically. So it was really cool. Staying with families is really cool too because they cook you breakfast and like they, you know, all that kind of stuff. It's awesome.
What do you have for breakfast?
They have like very elaborate breakfasts. Usually it was sort of like a fried egg and an omelet, a bunch of fruit juice, coffee, bread. It was pretty cool, actually.
And was it good?
Yeah.
Good
there's
stuff?
Like, there's like a national consensus on what to serve for breakfast, apparently. or it's required by the government.
it's like a national breakfast?
Everywhere had the same breakfast.
Wow.
Almost, like, maybe the fruit would be a little bit different. Or, right. like, instead of papaya juice, you'd be getting, like, guava juice or something. But it was, like, the same, almost exactly. And they'd come out and they'd be like, would you like a fried egg or would you like an omelet? And you're like, I would like a fried egg. And they're like, great, we'll bring your fried egg out. And I was like, okay. I'm like, this is exactly the same breakfast I had yesterday at a different in a different town.
Right.
It was kind of weird in that regard.
There's some comfort in that, though.
Yeah. And restaurants are kind of the same. So there's not really restaurants in Cuba.
Okay.
A lot of the restaurants are government run. There are some restaurants, definitely.
Right.
And then there's an emerging group of restaurants called Paladars, which are like family run, like restaurants.
Right.
Usually it's people that have converted their house into a restaurant.
Okay.
But they all kind of serve the same thing.
Right.
So you're like, you can get fish three different ways. You can get chicken three different ways. And you can get pork three different ways. That's pretty much how what every restaurant has.
Okay. I got to ask, though, did you get a Cuban sandwich while you're down there? Or is that an American thing?
I had one Cuban sandwich, and it wasn't that good.
Weird.
But, you know, have you been to Masterpiece Deli?
Where is that?
It's like 16th and Boulder, like in Lower Highlands.
No, actually.
They have a really, really good Cuban sandwich.
Uh-huh.
And my friend, George Jorge, actually did the menu and all the design work for them.
Uh-huh.
And he was like, are you guys going to have a Cuban sandwich on your menu? And they're like, well, we've thought about it, but we don't really want to. And he's like, I will give you my grandmother's recipe.
Holy
because
shit.
He's Cuban. And so Masterpiece Deli in Denver actually has the best Cuban sandwich I've ever had.
Wow.
Partially because it's like a legit Cuban person's recipe.
Yeah, totally.
And it was like forced upon them by the guy that designed their menu. So it's kind of awesome. So I feel like it wasn't nearly that good, but I did have a Cuban sandwich.
Okay. Yeah, fair
They
enough.
Weren't all over the place, though. I only saw them on menus like once or twice.
Okay.
Yeah.
So overall, what were your sort of impressions and takeaways from Cuba at this point?
I think it is, I'm really curious to see what happens with the U.S., kind of the embargo being lifted and all this stuff, because there's not much in the way of infrastructure. So what I think is going to happen is that tons of Americans will start to go there because the travel restrictions have been lifted.
Right.
And it'll really quickly become clear that it's just not ready for that yet. They don't have any hotels. They don't have anywhere to stay. They don't have, there's nothing like that. There's no stores. Like the restaurants are packed as is.
There's no stores?
Like, there's not really stores. Like,
where do people buy shit then?
I have no idea. When I was trying to buy an iPhone charger, I was wandering around from store to store to store, and I went in every store I could find.
Yeah.
And the stores are like weirdly sparse. Like the way that I was talking to my friend the other day, and I was describing it like, imagine going into a Radio Shack. So the stores are all like roughly that size.
Okay.
Like a Radio Shack. Sure, you know, reasonably compact.
Yeah.
But imagine that it had 5% of the stuff that a Radio Shack had, and then it was all evenly spaced around the room. So you're like wandering around.
So like, it's like a store, you like a fake store you'd set up for a toddler.
Yeah, totally. This is a store. Yeah. And you're like, you're looking around, it's like, okay, there's like a crappy set of headphones, two AA batteries.
Right.
Like a notebook. You're like, it's
so they
like,
have like 9 things that you can buy.
Yeah.
Okay.
And the stores are like kind of crowded and people are like there shopping. Like it's like people are out having fun shopping.
Would someone from Cuba's head explode like if they came to like an American grocery store and we have like fucking like 75 different kinds of cheese?
Yes, very much so.
Okay.
I mean, I think that would be just completely, I don't know. I mean, maybe they would be like, I assume this was what America was like.
Right.
But I think that they would be really shocked.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's not like a lot of places in South America and Central America and stuff. Like Chile has more amazing, crazy grocery stores than we have. You know?
Really?
So it's like, yeah. And a lot of places actually have like the equivalent roughly of like an American style grocery store. But Cuba was not even close.
Did you visit Bill down in Chile?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. When he lived there. Yeah.
Because I may as well make this explicit if I haven't done so in the blog or the intro or whatever, but I think you're the first set of siblings I've ever had on the show.
Yeah.
William Nee was, or Bill as we know him.
Yeah.
Was, I can't remember what episode number, but, he's a China researcher for Amnesty International, lives in Hong Kong. So we talked about Chile. We talked about China. We talked about Hong Kong. We talked about all sorts of stuff. And, so you got to go down there and their grocery store is,
And that wraps up episode 47 of the John of All Trades podcast. Big thanks to Ryan Mee. It's a cliffhanger. We're talking about Chile, and you'll have to come back next week to find out how that story ends. His brother, William Mee, was on the show before. This is his little brother. He's got a middle brother, too. Maybe at some point I'll talk to him. Who knows? We'll get all three of the Mee siblings on here. But for now, you're going to have to wait to find out next week about Chile. We're going to talk about North Korea. We're going to talk about travel all throughout the third world. He's hit like 38 countries in his young life, and he hopes to hit 100 by the time he shuffles off this mortal coil, which is kind of a weird and dark note, and why I put it that way, I will never know. I think that means it's time to wrap up the episode, and we do so by paying tribute to our sponsor, 4Degrees, the number 4, DEGRE.ES, your one-stop shop for all your online campaigns. Everything you could possibly need, from web design to search engine optimization to social media advertising. They got it all and more. Number 4, DEGRE.ES. That is Zach, who works there. He was on episode 9 of the John of All Trades podcast, and he is just a major, major dude. I will tease out next week's episode a little bit further on Monday. You can find that on Facebook and Twitter, JOAT Pod. Also at the website, johnofalltrades.us, J-O-N of alltrades.us. We will catch you back here next week for part 2 with Ryan Mee, the very first two-part episode we've ever done on the John of All Trades podcast, and it's well worth your time. So, we will see you then, and until then, say goodnight, Gracie.